People forget about step one. It's the most important.
Today on Grounded Wellness, we are joined by Dr. Daniel Pompa, a leading voice in cellular healing and detoxification.
Until you get that cell working, where it's detoxing, where it's protecting the DNA, you won't get well until you fix the cell.
2 decades ago, Dr. Pompa experienced a mysterious illness that left doctors stumped. His journey through heavy metal toxicity, mold exposure, and years of unexplainable symptoms forced him to dig deeper than conventional medicine ever could.
Catastrophic storm when these meet and bam. And that's when the gene gets triggered. That's when autoimmune happens. That's when you say, what happened to my life?
What he discovered has become his life's mission, helping others uncover the hidden toxins driving autoimmune conditions, hormonal imbalances, and chronic fatigue.
They're taking advantage of people looking for an answer. I know people want it to be simple, but it's not that simple.
Let's dig in. Dr. Pompa,
yeah.
Thank you so much for being here today.
How could I turn this down?
And I love it. You already downed your liver smoothie before we started.
Oh, yes, exactly. And the shoes are off and the liver smoothie's down.
I was so honored.
Were we supposed to drink that like at another front? I just liked it.
I was honored because you said that you hate liver.
I do.
But you
don't
like
liver. I love the benefits of liver.
Same.
I love the health aspects of liver. But like to me, like the... You know,
it tastes horrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Get around it. I mean, yeah, this is the only way that I can eat it.
That was perfect. Good. That's why it is gone.
I'm so glad you liked it. Well, diving right in, I want to hear a little bit about your story because now you share so much information online, but you didn't just study the things that you talked about. You lived it. You have so much lived experience. So tell us a little bit about your story and your healing journey.
Yeah, I didn't choose any of it. So be clear. It chose me, I believe, for such a time as this. You know, I got sick all the way back in, started in 1999 and 2001, 2, 3, 4, I was very sick. And just trying to get my own life back, honestly. Everything I learned to do that, well, that's what I taught doctors for 20-some years and still teaching today. The most important part of that was, is my wife who's sitting over there. Many times she was on her knees crying out to God for an answer for me, even for our family. At that time, we had 2 young boys. We have 5 now. But this particular time, as clear as I'm speaking to you now, she says God spoke to her clearly. And I know that sounds crazy, but if you knew my wife, she's not over spiritual. She's not, you know, anything woo woo, nothing. It's like she said, God spoke to me that not only is he going to get you well, meaning me, but you're going to take a message to the world. And when she would say that, it never would go over too well with me then because my exact words, I can't even get myself well. It's like, what are you talking about? So I did not accept that then, but I can tell you this, I am here today. She was right. God was right through her. You know, that's what's happened. So my passion, my purpose, pain to purpose, is in that promise. So our saying is from pain to purpose to promise.
I love that. Yeah. And I remember listening to the first episode of your podcast, which is called Pain to Purpose.
And I dug into that story.
Yeah, I loved it. Everyone listening should go back and listen to that episode. It's so encouraging. And that's what stuck out the most to me also was just the faithfulness of your wife and how she stuck by your side and trusted in God that you would heal and, you know, become the man that that she married because you were, you know, she married you and you were one way and then you got sick and you became incredibly sensitive to a lot of different things to the point where she would have to take the kids out of the house a lot of times.
You remembered that well.
Yeah. You couldn't handle the noise. And, what role did her faith play in your healing journey?
Everything. she was the rock, I mean, of that whole thing. She was the hero of that whole story. I mean, honestly, it's, you know, my kids now as adults, they were young at the time, but now they look back and they realize that her role in it.
It's one of those things they probably didn't see as much back then, but
totally,
then
in
hindsight, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah. You know, recently we just watched a lot of old videos from when they were young, you know, and they all looked at the videos and were like, they saw her role as not realizing what she really was and the rock she really is. So I think they had an eye opening, wow, mom was really dialed in, you know, but she was the strength through it all. I literally going through it, I tried to push her away. When you're that sick, it's guilt, it's shame, it's all the traumas, you know, that we unfortunately store up and, you know, cause us to misbehave. But, you know, I had, and even self-pity, but I was trying to push her away. And yeah.
She didn't accept it.
No way. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would say most women would have said, yeah, right, I'm out of here. You know, I'm not going to be treated this way. Or I brought so much stress to her life, you know, and she stuck with me.
And what were you dealing with exactly at the time while you were sick? Like, what happened? What were your symptoms?
You know, I mean, like so many people where, you know, looking back, it starts with like odd energy loss. But that it was kind of more abrupt for me, whereas some people it's kind of like slows down and you don't remember where it started. You know, your life is like, how did I get here? Mine was very abrupt. So I thought I was just overtraining. I was doing a lot of miles on my bike, you know, putting in a lot of miles in. And I was working a very busy practice. So I thought I'm just overstretching, you know, overstressing myself. So I cut back and it wasn't getting better. And then it was like it went from just energy loss to like weird anxiety, weird symptoms, right? And then it went to insomnia, where I couldn't even get to sleep, couldn't get back to sleep. Then it went to like sound sensitivity. Then my gut stopped working. And then I started like chasing food. Like I couldn't eat this, couldn't eat that. That's never happened to me before. So it's kind of an abrupt transition. And I couldn't even work out anymore. I'd go to the gym, work out, and it would just wipe me out.
You couldn't handle any more stress.
Couldn't handle exercise or stress. Yeah. Couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle loud noise. The kids crying. You said she would take the kids out of the house because I couldn't handle a crying kid. It would just send me in a rage. So I became someone who I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, even like, I remember like her like fingernail polish on the counter. I'd be like, oh my, like, stop. Like, it would just kill me. So I became that neurologically not right, you know? And so I thought it was my adrenals, chased my adrenals because surely I'm not adapting to stress. And of course, every test would indicate my adrenals were fried, but it wasn't my answer. My thyroid, I had every symptom for thyroid problems. And, you know, but my thyroid, I addressed it and I wasn't it, right? It's like still wasn't well. Some symptoms better, but there was no lasting change. And really, you know, life was still not livable. So yeah, I mean, it was through more discovery that I found out what the real cause was. And that's what today most people aren't doing. Even I have a lot of criticism for alternative medicine because I feel like we've moved further from getting to the cause instead of closer. Alternative medicine used to be known for all about just getting to the real causes. And now I feel like it's kind of, you know, yeah, treating things more naturally, but still not cause oriented. And that's...
Do you think alternative medicine is doing with supplements what conventional medicine has always done with pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, I think so. And again, I'm not against supplements, you know, and there's even a time and a place for a medication. But how did I get my life back? I got my life back from getting to the real cause.
Which was mercury.
Mercury was the primary part of my perfect storm. When I'm training doctors, I always say, look for the perfect storm. What I mean by that is three stressors that come together. And there's typically a primary storm and then you know, two other you know, smaller storms, if you will. But if you remember the movie, it was three storms that came together. And they call it a perfect storm. Catastrophic storm, when these meet and bam. And that's when the gene gets triggered. That's when autoimmune happens. And you don't even know you have autoimmune. That's when the bizarre symptom. That's when you say, what happened to my life? And that's when you become the person who tries everything and nothing works.
Yeah.
Perfect storm. And, you know, three stressors come together. So, yeah, mercury, absolutely primary. I had dental work done my symptoms started right after that. But that was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back, right? That was like what overflowed my bucket. It was already filling. And then boom, overflowed the bucket.
When you had the fillings removed.
When I had them removed. So let me tell you how I even figured that out. So a year or so before that, I was working with a very bright endocrinologist from a natural perspective, right? He was very good. He said, Dan, I think you have mercury toxicity. I'm like, I thought so too. I did blah, 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 tests, this and that. And he said, well, look, if, you know, because I was online and I found Mad Hatter's disease, and that's these people making hats were mercury poison, lead poison. And they obviously had a lot in their blood because they were using it every day. My blood test was negative. So I'm like, oh, it wasn't this. Urine test was negative. But if I was acutely getting exposed daily, it would have showed up. So it was negative. So here I am a year or so later. And he's like, no, that would only be if you were getting poisoned daily. I think it's more chronic.
Because it was already, it had accumulated in your tissue.
Exactly.
So it wasn't showing up.
Exactly. It was in the tissues. Yeah. And that's, heavy metals are very difficult to test for. Even if you challenge them out of the tissue, you're still not looking at what's in the brain.
How do you find what's in the brain?
Biopsy, the only way. Wow. Who's going to do that? No one.
Wow.
You know, the best studies on mercury are oftentimes autopsy, biopsy studies, like the Drash study. The Drash study was a German study, but the number of silver fillings in the mother's mouth was proportional to how much mercury they found in the baby's brain on autopsies. Proportional, boom. So ladies, the number of fillings, they are 50% mercury. I had them in my mouth. They were the vapor of that mercury vapor goes right into your brain and it accumulates. And that's the problem with toxins, right? Our government protective bodies will say, well, look, there's only this much aluminum in this product or this much mercury or this much lead. So it's nothing. Well, the problem is they're called persistent toxins. They accumulate, they store up over time. So there's no studies done on what's stored. Oh, and here's the problem. What stores up in you or me is different than this person because your detox pathways may be challenged because you're living in a moldy home, unknowing, already challenging your cellular detox pathways. And now you're accumulating these toxins much more than another person. So what is safe for you? It becomes the question. But anyway, so the mercury that I was wearing contact lenses, which the thimerosal, which contains mercury, same mercury they put in vaccines, by the way, was in there in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. So it was like I was putting mercury directly in my eyes. It was in the saline solution. There was a time in my life where I was, Mr. Workout needing a ton of tuna. I lived at the beach at the time.
I was going to ask you about tuna.
I ate tuna every day.
Is mercury in tuna a legitimate concern or is it being unfairly vilified? Because I've also heard that tuna contains high amounts of selenium, which kind of binds to the mercury and renders it less harmful. Is there any truth to that or is it a legitimate?
No, I think it's a legitimate source, but mercury in tuna or fish, has really caught the media's attention. And it's, but I think that the sources that are much higher and more dangerous, to your point, are the other sources. Like if you're putting mercury, ethyl mercury, in a vaccine, they used to call it the safe mercury. And you know why they call it the safe mercury? Because in a monkey study, they were like, look, it's gone in just 2 or 3 days. It's just absolutely gone. And what they didn't realize is the reason it was gone, it was because it was going into the brain.
Yeah.
It is the most toxic form, actually, because of its ability to cross into deep tissue. And so a scientist later was doing a study saying, we saved those brains of the monkey. I wonder if that mercury's in there. He looked at it, and of course, there it was.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and people didn't hear that part of the story. Mm. So it's not the safe mercury. It's worse. The ethyl mercury is worse than the methyl mercury that's in tuna. But methyl mercury is an organic mercury that's very, it crosses into membranes as well. It crosses through the gut. So, and even with the selenium, it's still a toxic source. But that said, there are more toxic sources, like the ethyl mercury that was going in my eyes, the ethyl mercury that was going, in vaccines and children.
Yeah.
And again, I don't even want to get this shut down, but I think we're in a much safer place because, RFK has came out and said, this has to be out. Mercury and aluminum have to come out of vaccines. Trump just said, he's like, why is it in there anyway? Who thinks that's good? We know how toxic mercury and aluminum is. Like, let's get it out of there. People don't understand. It's in there as an adjunct, as they call it, to stimulate the immune system. We give a dead virus and we have to activate your immune system against it, which is one of the reasons why anything else in that vaccine you will develop allergies to, because you're activating the immune system, right? It wouldn't work without an adjunct. So if we take aluminum mercury out, then I ask the question, well, what's going in?
Mm-hmm.
Because
they
need something to activate the immune system, and that's never going to be a good thing, right? So when mercury started coming out of vaccines, aluminum went in. And so, yeah, anyways, that's another subject. But yeah, I think when we look at sources, you know, mercury from vaccine or from vaccines, from fillings, it was mercury vapor that close to the brain and far more dangerous source than fish. So when you look at the number one sources of mercury, fish is down here. So, you know,
but it's like the media says, focus on this one.
Yeah,
so you don't have
absolutely.
To think about this one.
Amalgam fillings was the highest like source. Right. And so, and we don't even understand that even like lead, for example, is it's what we inherit from mom that is actually the number one source.
Yeah, and I
would argue mercury is up there too. What we get from mom in utero is where we start life and then it slows down your detox pathways. And now here you are years later, 20s, 30s, 40s, sick. Unknowing it all started in utero, mm-hmm. which slowed down your cellular detox pathways, challenged them. Now your cells aren't able efficiently to work the way they should. And your energy starts to go down as a first sign, right? And then your glutathione pathways, that's something that your cells help remove things, toxins from the cell. And then your methylation, which is what protects your DNA and is also part of detox, that starts to slow down. And now you start accumulating every toxin, the microplastics, the pesticides, the other heavy metals. And we didn't realize that it was our exposure in utero. But yeah, so when you look at a graph, I think in one of my PowerPoints, I show like, you know, how these sources, amalgams, vaccines, and then down here is fish.
Yeah.
But this is what gets all the attention.
And you finally found out that it was mercury when you did a challenge test.
Yeah.
And that showed mercury.
I had mercury, lead, an odd pattern of a lot of stuff, showing that my detox pathways were absolutely challenged.
Can you explain what a challenge test is?
Yeah. So you're taking a water-soluble chelator. DMSA, DMPS, EDTA. Those are water-soluble chelators. They work, but they come in, they pull, and then you measure it on your urine. Now, here's the thing. Very, very sick people oftentimes show oddly low on that test even. And I say this to say there's no perfect test because you'll look at it like autistic children. You don't see anything. And that now has become like a sign of that's a problem.
Yeah.
So, and oftentimes you ask people, how did you feel during that test? And they say, I felt horrible, actually. And yet nothing shows. So you know that it just backed up and didn't come out.
Yeah.
And that's a bad sign. Those two people are typically very hard to detox. And you have to work with them to get those pathways working again, even before you start to detox. Mm. So what I teach is there's a preparatory phase, a prep phase before you go into a body phase. Before you go into what is a brain phase, because what is in the brain is years of accumulation. And that's really what makes people really sick. So most of the detox in alternative medicine right now, if you will, functional medicine is 3 months of detox. And it's typically using weak chelators like Corella, cilantro, and they don't work. They make things worse. But to get it out of the brain, it's years, not months.
Wow.
And that's what people don't get. And so I've spent a lot of my years being very, you know, critical about the detox. We think it's as simple as sitting in a sauna. I love saunas, but it's not going to get the mercury out of the brain. You have to be very specific about that.
Okay. I want to get more into detox. I first want to focus on your approach to treating the cell and why cell health is so important for overall health. Because I've always thought this, like, we are going to manifest diseases in different ways based on our genetics and what we're prone to. And I don't believe that genes are our destiny, but it's like it all stems from the cell and people just show their dysfunction in different ways. And I love there's something you say that's you don't get well until the cell gets well.
You don't get well until you fix the cell.
You don't get well until the cell gets well.
Until you fix the cell.
Okay, until you fix the cell.
Uh-huh.
Can you explain what that means?
Yeah. So there's so much here, right? So as I was explaining, right, in the cell is where we make energy, your mitochondria. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's so much there because so the reason why people can't lose weight, the reason why people don't have energy, the reason why people have brain fog, arguably is that mitochondria. And we'll talk more about that. But in the cell is also your DNA. So to your point, your DNA is not your destiny. The old dogma was, you have diabetes or a thyroid condition because your mother or father mm-hmm. did. Yeah, we know that's not true now.
I think a lot of people still think that.
Yeah, because the medical field still thinks that. Even though there's, I mean, scientific literature has exploded. That's been gone. That is so old, it's ridiculous. But maybe 1-3% of diseases are purely genetic. Okay, that's it. The rest are epigenetic, meaning that gene gets triggered, turned on. So when toxins start building up in the cell, that gene gets triggered and turned on. And that's a problem. When your methylation decreases because toxins are building up in the cell, that its job is to protect that DNA. Now it's unprotected, you trigger a gene, turned on. Now the good news is you can turn it off. So, but the fact is until you get that cell working, where it's detoxing, where it's protecting the DNA, where you're making normal amounts of energy, which determines how well you detox, how well your brain works, right? All of that is determined by what we do in the cell. So you get sick by yourself, but that's where the solution lies. So you won't get well until you fix the cell. So that's why when people are doing all this detox, it's like, well, look, unless you upregulate, meaning get active again, what's broken, the cell's removing toxins, good luck.
Yeah.
You're not going to ever, you're going to be doing this sauna, this bath, this thing, that, you know. But it's this.
Yeah.
This is what broke in me. It wore down to the point of exhaustion, to the point where toxins now aren't coming out of the cell. And now if toxins build up in the cell, you make less and less energy. You see? Mm-hmm. It's this, you know, this give and take thing. And the less energy you make, the worse the detox gets. Oh, and the more inflammation happens. And the more inflammation happens, the less energy you produce. It just keeps going around in a circle. But you know, the reality is that if you don't fix those pathways, you don't ever get your hormones working normal. As a matter of fact, that cell will stay inflamed. An inflamed cell, every hormone that makes you feel good, stay thin like you are, your brain to work like it should. Right? To be able to focus, walk in a room and know exactly why you're there. Not, why did I come here? Okay. Yeah. Which brain fog is so many people, you know, this is what they're suffering with. Okay. Those hormones have to attach to receptors that are right on that cell. Like this little thing, think of that as a hormone receptor right there. Thyroid hormone is just one example. I could be talking about progesterone, estrogen, testosterone. It has to attach to that. And then it gets its message or itself in that cell. You feel normal. Everything works great. You make normal energy, right? Thyroid hormone works within your mitochondria in that cell, and you burn fat for energy when you're not eating. Everything's great. Everything works good. But what if something's blocking this receptor, damaging it maybe, and now thyroid hormone, even though it's normal in your blood, even though maybe you take it and make it normal in your blood, if that receptor's damaged, and that can't get in, that it can't dock to that receptor.
Can't utilize it.
Can't utilize it. So that's why it's very in vogue right now, especially in alternative medicine, to take bioidentical hormones. And there's a time and a place, especially if you don't have a gland to make them. But fact is that most often we're making blood levels normal. Matter of fact, when I was looking for an answer, I got all my blood work because I knew my thyroid wasn't working, but my blood work was still normal. Now, maybe in 10 years, 5 years, it would have been not normal, but it was still normal. But what they didn't tell me was my thyroid hormone, my cells were so toxic and inflamed that it couldn't get to that receptor.
Yeah.
It's called hormone resistance. We understand insulin resistance, meaning...
also a hormone.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it makes sense. I've heard you talk about this. But I've never heard anyone say this before, like describing the concept of hormone resistance. But if we can have insulin resistance, we can also have resistance to any hormone if the cell is inflamed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is your detox protocol? You said it can take years. Is that typically the case for most people that they need to do, like spend years detoxing?
Look, it depends on the toxin, right? That they're major toxin. But once these pathways in the cell start to diminish, now you start accumulating all kinds of toxins, truthfully. But some people can do the right, what I'm known for is my cellular detox, okay? And I'll explain this process that I've developed and taught for 20 years. But some people can do the right detox 3 to 6 months and start to feel better, where they start to like come on board, right?
Just depends on the bucket.
It's, yeah, exactly. It depends on the bucket, meaning this bucket, if we have two buckets, right? This one's because she hasn't drank her shake yet. This one's barely full. This one's empty because someone gluttonously chugged it down. I'm ready to drink
hers. My second one today.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to drink hers. Okay. Now, I'm not going to do this because it's too precious, but if this was water, I'd do it. If I just put a little stress on this person, because this bucket's really full, think of this as all of the physical, chemical, and emotional stressors and traumas that we accumulated from the womb, as I pointed out earlier. And this person, even if there was just a little bit of water in here, I could stress this. Look at this. No, you know, nothing comes out. This one, little bit of stress. This is where people are living their lives right here. This is where I was. And if you remember me saying, when I got those amalgams drilled out, the mercury, my bucket was already so full, it went right over.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, that's when the gene gets triggered. That's when your bucket gets to this point, now your cells are just exhausted. No wonder your energy output's gone. No wonder you start triggering genes. No wonder all these bad symptoms. No wonder all the inflammation increases and blocks your hormones. Nothing works. Even diet doesn't work. People are telling you to exercise more. You can't. You don't have energy.
Yeah.
You know, and all the hormones you're taking, it kind of works and then it doesn't. Just supplements. These supplements won't even get into the inflamed cell, half of them. So blood levels, not a good indicator of how you feel, even if you make your blood look better.
And I think that's why so many people are frustrated today who aren't feeling well, and they go to their doctor, and the doctor says, sorry, everything's normal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you must be imagining it.
Absolutely.
Did you face that same frustration in your journey?
Absolutely. I mean, they looked at me. I remember I spent $5,000 on blood work, right, hoping for an answer. And the doctor came out, and that's when I ran all that mercury test too, right? And he was like, you're healthier than me, son. And I'm like, you know, that's not what I wanted to hear. If you told me, you know, we think you have cancer, I'd be like, okay, fine, let's go. You know, it's like, at least finally, if there's
something to fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that didn't happen that day. So, you know, my hormones look normal, you know, just, you know, some things a little out of range, but nothing that explained my illness, right? And today we're spending a lot of money on, you know, different gut tests, SNP tests, these genetic tests, and they're fun. They're in, you know, but it's really not looking to why you're sick, you know, and your genes don't determine your destiny, nor do your SNPs. I have the MTHFR gene. That's why I'm talking. It's way more complicated than that. It's not so simple. You know, the reason you're sick is something has accumulated in your body. It's about removing, not just giving.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then I said I would explain the process. So step one, what I teach is upregulating all of these functions. And we do that before we even start detoxing, because that is critical. And in that prep phase, we get the cell starting to work the way it should. And then we strengthen all the downstream detox pathways. We support the liver, the kidney, the gut, the lymph. All that needs opened up before you ever think about detox. And that could take 1 month, it could take 3-4, depending on the person. Some of their functions starting to come back,
okay,
and then say, okay, let's step into detox. So
you don't even start detox?
No.
Step one
is just to get the downstream open up and this cell working.
So what does that?
So my 5 R's is the roadmap. I used it to teach doctors as a roadmap of how you fix the cell and how you start to detox the cell. And it very quickly, our number one is remove the source. Like, meaning, if you have silver fillings containing mercury, let's get through it. If you're living in a moldy home, let's deal with that. If you have a cavitation infection, let's deal with that. You get it. Okay, so different sources, we want to look at someone's life, remove them, okay? Does it make sense? Our number two is regenerate the cell membrane. So again, this membrane on this apple that's our cell for this talk. I'm molesting your bowl of apples here. I will eat this after. But, you know, this membrane is where your hormone receptors are. The membrane determines what comes in the cell and what's able to come out. The membrane, I do classes on just the cell membrane. I call it lipid therapy, how we fix the cell membrane. And diet plays a role here. I've developed a lot of products here. What you avoid. Seed oils that people are hearing about, right? The damaging effects of seed oils. The reason they're so dangerous, omega-6 is so important in the cell membrane that rancid, bad omega-6 goes right in and it incorporates into this membrane. And it's there not for days, not for months. Now, newer studies showing up to 2 years half-life of these things
so
in the cell.
So you're building your cell membranes yeah. from oxidated
fat, rancid fat.
Like
so it affects
fat.
The function.
Yeah.
So now you have toxins driving inflammation, blocking your hormone receptors. but now you have these bad fats too. I mean, America, we don't have a chance. I mean, think about it. You know, no wonder you go to Italy and these places, you don't see fat people. Mm-hmm. Like, why? They eat 20% more carbs than we do. It's like, well, less inflammation.
Yeah.
The reason you can't use fat as energy has less to do with your diet than people might think. It's like, it has a lot to do with how inflamed your cells are. So we look at just those two things and we really have to clean those up. But the membrane, there's a saying, I didn't come up with it, but life and death begins on the membrane. Your cellular health, your hormone health, how your brain works, right here. You know, again, when this is inflamed, diet doesn't work.
That's what everything attaches to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Your diet change seems like it doesn't work for you. You don't have energy. You still don't lose weight. You know, it's all these things happen because the membrane determines your health. That's it. Our number three is restoring the cell energy. If you don't restore the energy and the ability of the mitochondria to make energy, then you won't upregulate all of these detox pathways. So then the cell's ability to get rid of toxins decreases and toxins build up, inflammation gets even more. And R4 is reducing cellular inflammation. I teach a lot of strategies around that, but you have to diminish that inflammation. And then R5 is reestablishing methylation. I've already pointed out methylation is how we protect our genes, how we turn genes on and off. Methylation, when it drops, glutathione drops. So the cell's ability to detox it drops. If people watching this, the announcement of Tylenol causes autism. I had to do a video on it. I even did a little piece on my podcast about it because people, a medical doctor friend of mine came to me and said, Dan, Tylenol causes autism? I said, hold on. It's part of the cause. It doesn't cause autism, meaning you can get autism without a mother taking Tylenol, mm-hmm. although it increases the risk. Why? Because it affects certain detox pathways. It affects methylation, which is part of detox, directly. It can inhibit receptors, specifically even in the brain, for folate. Folate, folic acid, is part of the methylation process to be successful. So if you're inhibiting that, now you're inhibiting methylation, especially in the brain. So inflammation occurs in the brain, which is where autism starts and the gut. So that blocking that folate receptor and also affects a pathway called the P450, which is a detox pathway. Oh, and it also affects the liver. So it shuts down detox pathways. So Trump tipped his hand in that, well, it's not just Tylenol. People were wondering, like, why was he talking about vaccines when it was acetaminophen and Tylenol causes autism? Well, because, see, the toxins in vaccines, when you take Tylenol, it reduces the ability to get rid of these toxins.
Yeah.
And they drive their neurotoxins, mercury, aluminum, and there's others, right? And so that's why that he was making recommendations about vaccines, because he wanted to say it's this combination, right? It's not just one.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, people didn't hear that necessarily. But anyway, so those are my five R's of how we start to get the cell working. And then step two is we use real chelators. Okay, not like cilantro, Corella, and all these little things that people think are, it doesn't work that way. You have to use things that grab on and don't let go, but we use them outside of the cell. When we start moving these toxins out, these chelators grab on and make sure it goes all the way out of the body. But functional medicine uses chelators incorrectly. They don't use those in their half-life, meaning they don't keep the levels up in your blood long enough.
Okay.
In between taking them, so you get redistribution.
Recirculate.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's chelators, an example of an effective chelator?
So there's many. Like EDTA is an effective chelator. DMSA, DMPS, there's other ones now. DOTA, there's a lot of different chelators.
But someone probably shouldn't just start taking those
blindly. No way. Because again, people think you detox with those. No, it's still about that cell. Step one is fixing the cell.
Yeah.
Step two is using chelators. Just so all chelators do is move it out of the body. They're water soluble anyway. They don't get into your brain and fat tissue, right? We have to get the cells doing that. And then we push them into these catcher's mitts, if you will, and pulls it out of the body. People forget about step one. It's the most important. Step two is utilizing chelators. Step three, we use binders in the gut because a lot of the toxins get brought to the liver, bind to bile, which is a fatty substance used to digest fat, but it gets dumped in the gut eventually to be used for digestion, but it brings toxins with it. And then guess what? Your body's designed to reabsorb the bile back to the liver. Mm. It brings the toxins right back. It's called auto-intoxication. So we have to stop that process. So step three is using binders correctly in the gut to make sure we don't auto-intoxicate.
I'm just thinking about myself as you're saying this stuff, because like I have a sauna that I use almost every day.
And that's fine.
While I'm home.
Yeah.
Sometimes I try to take some charcoal when I go in. I don't know if that does anything.
Yeah, so charcoal isn't doing anything for systemic toxins, okay. Right? It's a gut binder.
Okay.
But here's the problem, right? So charcoals, most of them are dirty or they're not active enough to really matter. In products I've created, we get this one carbon, it's from Holland actually, but it's a very activated carbon. If you took some of it and went like this, you would see it go like this. That's how activated it is. And it's clean because a lot of the binders, bentonite clays, other carbon binders, there's zeolites, there's many of them, but they're very dirty because the fulvic acid, humic acids, they come from the ground. And you have to make sure they're clean. So a lot of people are taking binders. We take them in our lab and test them. Almost 100% of the time, they're dirty.
Meaning dirty as in?
Have heavy metals, contaminants.
Okay.
So you have to be very careful with those binders. But people take them and they think that is detox, right? Sitting in your sauna is great. It stimulates heat shock proteins. There's benefits right to it. But it in itself isn't going to get mercury and aluminum out of your brain, as an example.
Yeah. And is sauna something, or, you know, any detox practice, like, are they something that someone should just go out and start doing? Or would you recommend working with someone? Or does it kind of depend on how you feel?
Yeah, well, again.
Because, I feel really good after a sauna, but I know some people, it makes them feel worse.
Yeah, when I was sick, it made me feel worse, right? Yeah. So you have to understand, cold baths, saunas, they work on a premise called hormesis, meaning they stress you. And if you adapt, you feel better. Mm-hmm. Right. If you don't, the next day especially, you feel worse and you never associate it with the cold bath or the hot sauna you did. Right. I was so sick, I would feel worse within 2 or 3 hours. I mean, I would just be like wiped out, dizzy symptoms. Right. But I was super, super toxic. But always evaluate how you feel the next day. Or even a nice thing about having like an Oura ring or a way to look at your sleep is how did your sleep go that night after you did the cold bath, after you did the sauna?
Yeah.
People are overdoing these things. But I love saunas as part of a detox pathway. People that are toxic, I always say do them on and on cycle. That's the other problem, is that detox is cycled. Your detox cycle as a woman is cycled. Everything in nature cycles, seasons cycle. The way the earth cleans itself cycles. So detox is the same way. So we always start with a 3-day on, 4-day off cycle. 3's on, 4 off. And then if that changes, it's determined by the person. Detox done correctly is very individualized. And that's what my program does. It works with people individually. So you might do better with more days on than someone else. Some people do better with a short cycle, but we'd have to do at least 3 days. That way, when we stop the chelators, you don't get this redistribution.
Mm-hmm.
So we minimize that by staying on at least 3 days. But I used to have to stay on 5-day cycles because if I would just do 3 days, day 2 off, I would get worse.
Yeah.
So staying on a little longer. And then the doses is determined by the individual. What chelators we use is determined by the individual. And that's different for everybody. So everyone wants like the detox box. It's not so simple. we have a rooster.
I know.
Yeah, that's great.
Is that the geese over there?
He's hiding. I don't even see him. Anyway.
What are some of your biggest detox pet peeves that you see online?
I do hate when people talk about Corella and these like weak binders as like the solution, because people get deceived by it. And I have no problem with Corella. I think a clean Corella can be very healthy, but I don't like when people think that it's that simple, right? When people make this detox product, like this is going to detox you. I hate it, because someone that was sick myself, I too fell prey to that stuff. So it really bothers me. Because they're taking advantage of people looking for an answer. And it's not that simple. It's not. I know people want it to be simple, but it's not that simple. You accumulated these toxins from the womb to the tomb and, 30 years of accumulating it. And to think that this little bottle of whatever it is going to cleanse you is absolutely irritating to me. And, you know, and I'm always at places when someone says, I did a cleanse, I did a detox, and then I'm forced to listen to what they did. And really what they did is just kind of start it up. But you feel good about yourself because you feel like you did a detox.
There's a placebo effect.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really not dealing with the deep-rooted, persistent toxins that are in their tissue. My goal, like now that I went from training doctors to bringing in a message directly to people looking for an answer, that's my PAMPA program, is to teach them the process, because it is very individualized. Your program would be different than your husband's, as an example, just because your body's going to like certain chelators. Your body's going to need different support. You're going to do better maybe with higher doses, maybe this, you know, him lower doses is very different. But to teach someone the process so they can do it long enough to matter. And I believe today with what's happening with our level of exposure to toxins, personal care products like that you're bringing an answer to, obviously the food and water we're taking in, the homes we're living in, what they've done in dentistry over the last, you know, 50 years has just been tragic in people's health. And these are the sources that people are ignoring, not understanding. But to get that out of your tissues, you better learn the process so you don't need me anymore.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the first step is removal. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think everybody can do without even like working with someone. Like, we can be aware of these things on our own, and you do such a good job of educating about all the potential sources.
That's what my Instagram's about.
Exactly. What are some of the biggest sources of toxins in our environment that people aren't paying enough attention to?
You know, I hate to say it, but the most basic violation that I see, even in our space, is I sit down with the gurus that most people would like think of as a guru. I go to dinner and I watch the waiter, waitress come over and pour tap water.
Yeah.
And I watch them drink it. And I go, oh, wow. Like, I would never drink that.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it.
I remember when my husband, so I was talking to you earlier about our farm, Primal Pastures. My husband and brother-in-law branched off and started Pasture Bird, which is purely pasture-raised chicken at a large scale. Anyways, Purdue acquired that company. And so once that happened, I was like, okay, Jeff, like, we gotta just buy water. That's an investment we can make now. Like, when we go out to restaurants, we're always gonna get bottles.
Yeah,
And we probably should have done that way before.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know, it's something that just feels like this extra expense, but it's so important and so worth it.
I'm not going to drink tap water because I know too much, right? Mm-hmm. But then I look at these people, and I guess they run on the philosophy that, hey, I don't do it all the time. But if I know that there's someone's, you know, hormones in that water, which there is.
And explain how that happens, because I don't think most people understand how hormones could be in their tap water.
Yeah, in their tap water. Yeah, so obviously, all these people, most of the hormones actually, ironically, go through their urine into the water. And that's normal. I mean, the body's not going to assimilate and utilize it all. So it ends up in the water that way. Now, you would say, yes, but we have filtration. City water is getting, you know, filtered at the where they're putting chlorine in, right? You know, they're cleaning the water. Hormones, there's no filtration that they're doing that touch the hormones. It's
what
too
about
small.
Pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, that's the thing. The pharmaceuticals are all there. The hormones, the pharmaceuticals, that's how it ends up in the water. So yeah, there's chlorine that they're adding, which is toxic, right? And they're doing it because there's other pathogens that they have to kill, because that's could be an issue. Then there's some fluoride, right? We're now finally hearing a lot about. RFK is saying this is, you know, this is a problem. It has been a problem. Everybody, look, if you look at what was accepted by the government, our protective bodies, years ago, it has gone down, you know, every 5 years, 10 years at least, it's gone down. Now what's accepted? Why? Because they're doing studies going, whoops, okay, let's lessen it. Let's lessen it. And of course,
and that's why
last
so
August,
to be our own advocates,
absolutely.
Because we know we've seen this pattern in history, and it's still happening with so many things.
Yes.
So we can't just blindly trust what we're being told to
no,
do.
No, because
and not do.
Exactly, we were told that amount's fine for
right.
you, right? It's like, and it's healthy, and it's good for your kids, and then they go to the dentist and they get even more, and then they brush their teeth with a toothpaste that has fluoride because that's so good. Mm-hmm. So fluoride is an absolute neurotoxin. Fluoride you know, absolutely has effect on your child's IQ. Fluoride absolutely has an effect on, you know, the brain just in general, right? And has been shown to cause bone cancer in boys. And so, of course, the levels have gone down and down. And last August, that study was like the nail in the coffin, to where people were like, okay.
What was that study?
It was basically a study showing how it affected the brains, especially in children. It was a very, very clear study. And I think probably the best study that was done on the topic. And it got a lot of attention. And people acted like it was new. By the way, same thing with the Tylenol. I was like, this isn't new. I remember a study from 2017, one from 2014, of, you know, Tylenol is a positive causative factor in you know, autism spectrum disorders. Exactly. So it's like, it's not something new, right? People are coming out like it's Trump's fault.
Right.
Yeah. It's very crazy. Yeah.
Anyways. Can you go off on fabric softeners? Because this is one of my biggest pet peeves.
Me too. Yeah. So, okay. We talked about water. You said that's a big one, right? So change your water. Get a darn RO system, right? Don't drink city water. Period. Okay. And don't drink it out of plastic bottles, right? Because we've learned how damaging the microplastics are, right? 240,000 microplastics in 1 liter of water. I mean, that's too much. And we, you know, we accumulate about a credit card. We take in a credit card size of plastic a week. And in autopsy studies,
a week.
On autopsy studies, they're showing the weight, that's what we take in. Yeah. Not what's stored is depending on your detox pathways, but we're talking about a teaspoon, the weight of a teaspoon in the brains on autopsy studies, accumulation. Oh, and then we're finding it in our testes, our, you know, ovaries and all of, you know, those parts. And it's like, my gosh, how do we all have cancer?
Shouldn't be there. Yeah.
Shouldn't be there. Okay.
It's a testament to the human body.
It's a testament to the human body.
Incredibly, we are made to
Absolutely.
Be able to withstand so much.
Isn't it true? I say it all the time, right? Until your perfect storm happens.
Exactly.
but fabric softener, oh, it's a pet peeve of mine. I did a video. My wife and I were walking the dogs, and I'm like, oh my gosh, these poor people are sick.
Uh-huh.
How do you know? I can smell it. It's kind of, oh, the fabric softener pours out, and you can smell what homes are using fabric softener, right?
Yeah.
And then the next house, oh my gosh, these poor people are probably overweight and can't figure out why. You know, she's like, okay, you should just do a video on that, because, you know, obviously you can determine who's healthy by the ones that are
so
smells.
Offensive.
So offensive.
I mean, yes, I've experienced the same thing walking by certain houses, and you just have to imagine if I'm this like insulted physically, mentally, like walking past this, like these people are living in it and smelling it on their clothes.
Oh yeah. And then when they approach you, you smell them.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh. And here's the thing. When I was sick, I was chemically sensitive. Fabric softener would set me off. I mean, I would get brain fog where it would ruin my whole day. So I learned, you know, I despised those who wore, and it was unfair to them, but, you know, because they didn't know any better.
Things.
But
people
it is one of the
stop.
Worst things.
You don't need it.
There's
a,
on average 6 neurotoxins in these things. Oh, and here's the thing. It's on your skin for how many hours? Oh, and then there's bed sheets are washed in it. So technically you're being exposed all day
24/7.
Long. 24/7.
Yeah.
But here's why it's absorbed, right? These neurotoxins go right in. They're hormone disruptors right through your skin. Like you put hormones on transdermally, meaning if you want them in your bloodstream fast, you put them on your skin. That's what your clothes are doing. Those fragrances, they don't even have to tell you what's in the fragrance, because it's intellectual property laws that protect those companies. There's things that have banned cancer causers, hormone disruptors for years, and yet it's in the fragrances that are in what you're washing your clothes with. And by the way, change the detergent that you're washing your clothes with, and don't use fabric softener. And that is my biggest pet peeve. I hate fragrances, and I hate them. I think the clothes is the worst because you're absorbing it all day long.
Such easy things that people can do.
It's an easy switch.
Yeah.
It's an easy switch. Today, it almost doesn't even cost more. So
no.
You can't, there's no excuse.
No excuse.
I get some families cannot afford organic, although today I think you should afford organic, but at least eat from the dirty off of the, you know, stay away from the dirty dozen, eat from the clean 15 if you can't afford organic, but change what you're washing your clothes in.
Yeah. And I think like some people would say, oh, it's too stressful to think about toxic exposures. Like I had a conversation with someone.
No, recently. Stress is being sick. Stress is being sick.
Exactly.
Stress is going, why don't I feel well? Why can't I think anymore? You know, it's like that stress.
Yeah. And it's these little things we can do that make a big difference and give us so much life back.
You know, you said it to start this conversation. Look, you may not be able to, you know, do Pompa's program yourself. You know, you need a coach for that, right? But you can do this now.
Yeah.
You can stop all the rancid seed oils right now. When you go to your grocery store, all you have to do is read the label and say, okay, no sunflower seeds oil, no vegetable oil, no canola oil, no soy oil, corn oil. I mean, come on, you can do that. Everyone can do that and buy products that don't have that. Everybody can change the fabric softener. Everybody can drink RO water. Pretty simple.
What's your take on Botox and fillers?
Yeah, I get in trouble, but I don't care because I'm not a fan. My wife and I'm 60, you know, she's 58. We've never had it and not going to do it. I don't care if I look older. I don't care because I know too much. You know, those fillers stay in there and people think they're going, no. Newer studies are showing how it blocks lymphatic flow. Newer studies are showing that it's not here anymore, but now it's here and they're seeing it on MRIs.
Yeah, it moves. I interviewed a plastic surgeon and he said that they find it in MRIs over 10 years
Absolutely.
After it was injected when most people would say, oh, it only lasts a few months, but we are finding.
And your immune system hates it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care what they, and by the way, I don't like it. I don't like the look. I think a woman aging normally with wrinkles is actually attractive. And, you know, I'm not alone on this. Trust me. I don't like this new look, okay, if we want to call it that. And add Ozempic to it. And, you know, Dr. Rob Whitfield, he's a very famous plastic surgeon. I love him. He was talking about Ozempic face. Now, I talked about Ozempic butt. You lose the butt goes. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about microdosing because you still get Ozempic butt and Ozempic face. It just takes longer. But the fact is that you lose the musculature in the face that gives you gorgeous, pretty look that you have, right? And it gets less and less and less. And then they're adding fillers to it. Now we have this zombie look. I mean, this is the look. The lips are coming out, the cheeks are coming up. And then, you know, this is normal now. I can't even do it. So, I mean,
anyone listening and not watching needs to go back and watch what Dr. Pompa just did to his face.
This is why I didn't know. Right here. Oh, with the lips out. I'm telling you, it is not a good look and it's getting worse. I mean, when you first start, it's like, oh, okay, you know, that looks decent. But it becomes this addiction.
Well, yeah.
You know,
perception drift where every time you look in the mirror, that becomes your new normal. And then you make additional changes and you get used to it and just keep making these changes. But then if you look back from, you know, 5 years ago where you started, you look completely different.
Yeah. And again, I'm not criticizing those who do it because they're caught in this new paradigm. Social media is causing it, comparing themselves to others. So I get it. It's identity things. I mean, there's so much to it, right? Just like, and we could talk about breasts next and I'll really get in trouble and I'm going to have all kinds of haters. But the fact is that, you know, we're causing problems. You know, breast implant illness, BII, is now a huge thing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's only increasing as obviously the number of breast implants increase, but now it's the years they're in, right? Just like amalgam fillings. No one gets amalgam fillings in and get sick right away. It's years of accumulating this, right? And that's
what the information
happening.
Then comes out 10 years later. And I think
here we go again.
Have that mindset of like, okay, what is happening now that everyone thinks is normal that 10 years from now, it's going to be common knowledge that it actually causes a lot of harm.
Listen, everyone was using HCG. It was the Ozempic of the 80s and 90s, right?
What is that? Is that something in urine?
Human chorionic growth factors, where they get it from pregnant women urine.
Yeah.
Bodybuilders used it after a cycle of testosterone. They would use it to basically boost up, keep their hormones so they didn't get this post-cycle drop, right? And people realized that you could take it and go on low-calorie diets, which low-calorie diets work in the beginning. You lose 10, 15 pounds, and then they stop working because you lose muscle. Sound familiar? Lose muscle, and then the metabolism slows down. That's what happens with Ozempic. And then you stop losing weight. But if you take HCG, And everybody, when they took it, because it was a hormone, felt better. Yeah. Everyone was like, I feel so good, Ozempic. And all these things are positive, and I'm losing weight, I look better. Disaster. It just, everyone's hormones went to crap.
And people lose their hair.
Oh, horrible. It ended in a, I predicted it. Everyone hated me. I wasn't doing social media then, but I was telling everyone that this is a mistake. No one liked it. But here we are.
Never going to outsmart God. No. Never going to outsmart nature. What else do you think people are doing now that is super harmful, but like people are just doing it anyway?
Well, you know, I think that too many of these bioidentical hormones were running into the problem. And again, there's a time and a place, I would argue, right? And bioidentical is safer than other, you know, just synthetics. Mm-hmm. But I think the issue really is that it's just more and more and more. And because their cells can't hear the hormones, it takes more and more. And I think that we're causing more problems now than good.
Yeah.
You know, women are now taking testosterone. Women now, because the problem isn't the low hormones that everyone thinks. When you look at healthy cultures, ancient cultures, people that live very simply, primitively, as a woman ages and goes through menopause, her hormone levels lower. It's normal.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, it protects them from cancer. It's that normal. So when you look at their blood levels of hormones, you would say that in this country, they'd say that's pathological. And no, it's normal. The difference is they're healthy. Their cells here, they become more sensitive to the lower hormones. So their estrogen levels are lower, their progesterone levels are lower, their testosterone levels are lower, but they can hear the hormone better.
Yeah.
And they're healthy. Right. But here we think the answer is, oh, hormones are lowering. Boom. Let's give more hormones. I think
just chase those same levels that people had when
chasing young level.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be that way. It's not meant to be. You know, I've made an argument that, yes, because of plastics and these things, that I agree that some hormone levels are far too low. I agree that you could absolutely have too low of hormones for different reasons. And that's a problem. But that's not what we're seeing. We're going beyond it. Here's what you have to understand too. When innate intelligence in your body, hormones, people that are really good with hormones, they'll say, well, you have to be careful when you test your thyroid hormone. It's going to be different in the morning than this in the afternoon. Well, same with every hormone, meaning as even stress happens through the day, hormones change throughout the day. It's normal. So hormones change throughout your cycles of the month. Hormones alter. Innate intelligence does that. Meaning when you are under a lot of stress, all of a sudden cortisol goes up. All these processes change. Your estrogen levels change because it's figuring it out.
Yeah.
When you decide to take hormones, you're saying, this is it.
Mm.
You're taking innate intelligence out of the picture. You're taking the adaptation, that your stress adaptation, all these adaptations, that happen daily, happen weekly, happen monthly, you're taking that off the table.
That makes so much sense.
And that's not good. Now, again, I will be the first to say there is a time that you have to do it.
Yeah.
Because you're not producing, you don't have a gland, et cetera. But my point is that we're just reaching for the hormone instead of the cause of why you hormonally aren't well.
And as you're saying that, I'm thinking about personal care products and beauty products that women use that have these chemicals that disrupt their hormones and probably also interfere with those natural signals and fluctuations that are supposed to happen throughout the day.
Yeah. Those. If you look at a woman's start to her day, what is it, 418 chemicals
it's
according to EWG, right? Okay, so they're exposed to that on average, right? Double a man typically. But out of that, 289, I think, are known cancer causers. More than that are hormone disruptors. Putting it on your skin every day. And you wonder why, you know, you have hormone challenges.
Yeah.
So you think the answer is just taking hormones instead of saying, wait a minute, let me, number one, remove the sources. You know,
I think people think, oh, it's just this one thing. It's just this deodorant. It's just this perfume. It's like, it's all of that combined and how they interact with each other.
We talked about the water. We talked about what you're washing your clothes in. You know, fabric softeners. What about water you're washing your dishes with because it's going right into you? What about the food? What about the makeup? What about the shampoo? What about the lotion? What about, you know, I mean, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
So the point is we're inundated. The chemical revolution after the, you know, World War II has caused a new problem in humanity. And these toxins are storing up like no time ever in the history of humanity. My kids' generation is the first generation not out to live their outlive their parents. When you look at chronic disease, it's almost 70% increase in the last 50 years of chronic disease, especially in children. What the heck has happened?
Yeah.
Toxicity is what's happened.
And I think so many people just want to ignore it and assume that every product that they're using and being sold is safe. And you can do that, but you're really missing out on opportunities to live a longer, healthier life.
Absolutely.
So rather than just saying, it's too stressful, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Like, yeah, sure. But you're just making a choice to intentionally be naive to the reality of the toxic world that we live in.
Absolutely. There's no doubt.
That's what I love so much about the information that you're sharing. You and your wife travel a lot. What are some non-toxic travel hacks that you have? I think on another podcast, I heard you say you guys bring your own toilet paper.
We do. We brought it on this trip.
What brand do you use?
Well, we've tried different brands. You know who,
Lauren?
Yeah.
From Boston.
Lauren, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is, what's the name of it, though?
Our brand is the Skinny Confidential.
Yeah, you can find it, Skinny Confidential, but I don't get anything for promoting it, but I love it. It's good. It's, you know, it's firm.
My husband's complaint is that, his complaint is that it's like too thin. The brand's.
Hers is great. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a good one. But, the reason why is because even the chlorine process of making it nice and look beautifully white increases dioxins and they're cancer causers. But the point is it's going in tissues that's like, if you did this with toilet paper, it's not nearly like those tissues.
Yeah.
And so there's major hormone disruptors in it, formaldehyde. I mean, so you're putting in those tissues, not a good idea. So there's just certain big things, and that's one of them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I looked at the studies on it, I'm like, I'm not doing that.
I know. When I first learned about it, it wasn't that long ago. It was like a year ago, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Haven't we done this before?
I know.
This is a big one.
Yeah.
What else do you guys do on the road to stay healthy?
One thing when you fly a lot, we always take iodine, and we fast when we're on flights. Ketones, when you're fasted, say protect you from radiation.
Okay.
And then iodine is something that also protects you from radiation. I take it before the flight.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard baking soda after flying too can help with that.
Oh wow! I didn't even know that. Yeah, that taught me something. Don't know why.
I don't know. I've heard something about how it like helps to detox from radiation exposure.
Yeah, and it's not so much detoxing from it as it's protecting it from, and glutathione products is helpful too. I developed a product called Cell Clear. It raises intracellular glutathione. That's also protective.
I recently saw a reel that you did on alcohol, and your breakdown surprised me a little bit because you didn't condemn it entirely.
Yeah.
Can you give us your take on alcohol?
Hormesis. It's that premise that I said people were violating. The reason cold baths work is they are such a great stress, far greater than alcohol, actually. Meaning the body thinks it's going to die, so it upregulates norepinephrine, which can upregulate growth hormone and have all these positive effects if you adapt. If you don't adapt, meaning you did too cold, too long, and then you didn't adapt, you just did the opposite of what you were intending to do. You lowered your immune system and you increased inflammation.
I love this take. Real quick, I just want to interrupt because so many people are very quick to say either no one should be cold plunging, it's bad, or like everyone should do this every day. And what I'm hearing you say, like on and on, is that you have to know your body and know intuitively, like if something is working for you or working against you. Like, are you strong enough to handle this stressor or are you not? And I think just learning that about yourself, and maybe it's not a forever thing, maybe it's just like right now at this season in life, this feels too stressful, whatever this thing is. And so, I love that approach.
I see people violate hormesis. You know, the best way to understand it is exercise. That when you exercise, it's a stress. If you adapt, you get stronger, faster, etc. If you don't adapt, many people overtrain. And actually, the opposite happens. It's a negative. It creates inflammation. You're not sleeping as good. You keep getting injured. That's a sign that you're overtraining. Good trainers, they know that very little happens in the gym. It's the adaptation, the recovery that matters the most. That's why they're making sure you're sleeping good, your nutrition's good, all these things, because that raises the hormetic ceiling, it's called, meaning your ability to adapt. Then the trainer can stress you more and get a better outcome.
Yeah.
So a trainer, if you do the same exercise all the time, it becomes not stressful anymore. Mm-hmm. The body, then you're not adapting, you're not getting stronger. And studies show you actually become weaker. Mm. So it's like, it's crazy, but it becomes this odd negative. But the fact is that you have to increase the stress. That's why exercise variation creates the body going, oh, this is different. No, okay, yeah. And then it has to adapt. And if you adapt, you get better, right? So trainers are constantly adapting the stress or changing the stress to change your ability to adapt. And they're constantly focused on your heart rate variability, how are you sleeping, as signs, how do you feel? Are you more tired? You seem more tired this week. Let's back off. Let's go less intense. As a cyclist, we monitored all those things constantly. And we would never do the same routines. We would do really intense times, see how our body adapted to that. If it didn't adapt that well, we wouldn't go as intense and we'd come off of that intensity and go less intense. I say all that just to show you the complexity of this. So we're not bringing that into cold baths, saunas, detox, fasting. Fasting's another violation.
I've taught fasting for years
and I couldn't get anyone to pay attention because people still thought you'd just die without food. But now I'm going around saying the feast is as important as the fast.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I love fasting and I've done it on and off over the last several years, like in between pregnancies and breastfeeding and whatnot. And I have gotten such good results from it and have felt so good and clear-headed when I do fast. But then also there's people who say that women should never fast. It's bad for their hormones, but I'm with you. I think that like how you refeed matters so much, like how you're eating going into it. And I've always like really been careful about that, like prioritizing really nutrient dense most of the time, like animal-based foods to nourish myself after a fast, and have gotten really good results. But I know it can be done to excess and people
I think to close this loop, you know, you had said earlier, right, like it said that women, there's a new study now, you know, cold baths for women, and I've been saying this for years, but again, it's not that women shouldn't do cold baths. Women should be more cautious with how cold it is in the time.
Yeah.
You know, their male time of the month, right? Their male counterparts typically can do more and even more cold, but that doesn't mean that they can't benefit from a cold bath. But you absolutely, less is best. Absolutely monitor how you feel. How'd you slept later that day, that night, and how'd you feel the next day, which people don't associate oftentimes. So women typically should do less. And same with fasting. Women, you know, people say women shouldn't fast. No, women should just fast differently than a man and absolutely, you know, most likely have more feast days. So intermittent fasting daily, where people eat one or two meals in a window, people are doing too much of it. What happens is the body will eventually start to think it's starving, like a low calorie diet. And then it starts holding on to your fat and losing muscle. Not good.
Becomes counterproductive.
Absolutely. Yeah. So women, people with thyroid issues, adrenal issues, they need more feast days. 1, 2, even 3 days a week where they feast. They get up and eat three meals that day. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's high protein for 3 days of the week, like really high, you know, a gram per pound of body weight. Maybe it's high carbs if they're low carbs for 3 days a week. Feast famine is the key. So women, and like I said, hormone challenged people need to do more feast if they're going to fast. And if you do, I'm a teacher of 5 day fasting, whether it's a water fast or a partial fast, and we can talk about what that is. But I find another time during the month where we 5 day feast, high protein, high carbs, whatever it is. But feasting is as important.
That.
By the way, there are two different pathways. So the benefits of fasting is a pathway called autophagy. Mm-hmm. That means your body gets rid of bad cells, right? Senescent cells, cells that live too long, cells that drive inflammation, age you prematurely.
Yeah.
So during a fast, your body gets rid of them and it stimulates a stem cell to replace it. So we rebuild, we tear down and rebuild. It's great. But that's a catabolic pathway. That means your body goes into getting rid of things, right? So therefore, it wants to rebuild. That's why moving into a feast, not right after the fast. Yeah, that
easing
could be too much. Easing into it. But then the feast is a pathway called mTOR. Now, people that are like anti-agers, like they want to do everything to slow
they
down. They villainize mTOR. mTOR age you prematurely. mTOR is bad. Bodybuilders love mTOR because it's an anabolic pathway. It builds you, right?
Yeah.
Well, see, they're both right and wrong.
Yeah.
You know, this pathway can be very healing. It's like if you eat high protein, you go mTOR. and your joints will feel better. You'll go healing. But if you stay mTOR all the time, they're right. It will age you prematurely, yeah. Right? So
it's amazing. There's a season for everything.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking this is like very biblical too.
Yeah,
like seasons for fasting. There's a time for fasting. There's a time for feasting.
Absolutely. In ancient cultures, they were forced into times of famine.
Right.
Right? It's like...
And our species survived.
Yeah, so absolutely. Fine. And I believe genetically we're set up for that.
Yeah.
You know, we are. It helps you. But they feasted when they have it. They weren't counting calories.
Right.
When they had it, they ate it. And that... And when we emulate feast famine, and by the way, that's one of my principles that I've taught doctors, a diet variation, why it's important to change your diet, and feast famine cycling, why you need both. And the magic is in that change.
Love that. Okay, so back to alcohol, how we started this conversation.
Yes, that's right.
You were talking about how it actually can have a hormetic.
Okay. So now that y'all know a lot about hormesis and, you know, everything from all those perspectives, I'm so glad that you closed that loop. So my video was everyone's against alcohol right now, right?
Yeah.
It's vilifying alcohol. But again, when you look at all these healthy countries, when you go to Italy and France, and I mean, every country, they drink a little bit of alcohol. And they typically do it with a meal. My uncle lived to 96 and he had wine with every dinner.
Wow.
Yeah. And again, I could easily, from a scientific standpoint, make the argument and show you that a little alcohol creates hormesis, meaning it's a stress that upregulates cellular glutathione and all these positive things happen. But again, here's where people make the mistake is everybody's hormetic ceiling, how much they can adapt to and, you know, tolerate is different than the next person's. I would be the first to say there's people who should never drink alcohol, especially people who get addicted to it, right? Alcoholics, absolutely never. When I was sick, I couldn't drink any because my bucket was full. Oh, look, you drank it. I didn't even see you drink it. Yeah, I didn't even see that happen. But anyway, my bucket was so full, I couldn't adapt to the stress of cold, hot. Too hot of showers, I would be wiped out. Too cold a shower. When I'd go out in the winter, I had to bundle up because it would wipe me out the cold. Meaning all of those are stressors and I couldn't adapt. So I couldn't drop to any alcohol. Like two sips, my heart would boom, right? Mm. So is hot and cold bad? No. Is alcohol bad? No. But too much of any of it can be very bad. So everyone's hormetic ability to deal with alcohol is very different. So you know, how much of that? It could be zero for you, and it could be one to two drinks. For me, if I have three drinks, my Oura Ring will show me my heart rate variability drops, my heart rate goes up. Not good for me. I will cause every problem that they say becomes very toxic for me. If I have one glass of wine, no problem. I think it actually makes my sleep better. So the point is what is your hormetic ceiling? How much can you tolerate? Just like cold baths. You know, it's different for everybody, but I absolutely believe a little bit of alcohol could be good depending on the person.
What do you think about coffee?
Same thing. So again, some people, I always say, because the question is does coffee break my intermittent fasting window? And my answer is, I don't know, test, because it's different for everybody. So my wife, her morning coffee, and here's how you test. You get a glucose ketone meter. You just need a glucose meter. And first thing in the morning, before you do anything, you test your glucose for like 3 days in a row. And then 30 minutes after you test, so you write it down. Let's say it's...
People can buy these meters on Amazon.
Yeah, it, cheap.
You prick your finger.
Prick
and
your
then,
finger, yeah. Read it, right?
I have one of those.
And so you test it. 30 minutes later, you drink your coffee. So let's say it's 90 when you first got up. Drink your coffee. Test it again. Let's say then it goes up to 100, your glucose. And if that your average goes up when you did the average over those 3 days, your coffee is not good for you. You're spiking blood cortisol probably when spiked your glucose levels. You're coming out of your fasting window by doing that. You're breaking autophagy.
Yeah.
So then, okay, great. Add fat to it. Maybe it does better for you. Maybe not. Okay, great. Try a different coffee. Maybe it's a moldy coffee. Yeah, my point is that, or maybe you can't tolerate caffeine at all. That's the point. It's different for you than me. So your coffee may or may not be good for you.
Yeah. What do you think about nicotine?
Again, I you know, I'm probably more critical about nicotine because it's addictiveness, right? Mm-hmm. But again, some people can do a certain amount and never get addicted. Other people, They get addicted just like that. Nicotine is very, very addictive and very hard to break out. Two of my kids got addicted to it. And at first, they were on very small amounts. And they were, it gave them focus. And they loved it. In those little zins, they started by doing like, you know, one or two a day, right? Small amount. Arguably, you could prove that a small amount of nicotine could be beneficial. Okay, same with the alcohol, right? Hormetically. The difference is nicotine can be used every day, every day. I mean, so could alcohol, right? So too much is not good. But how much are you doing now? I mean, in other words, I promise you, because the how addictive it is, you probably cross the line into too much. My kids were doing like a can of those a day, which is like a massive amount.
That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, and
did they get off of it?
So both of them would quit. But my son, who was addicted to marijuana, he was addicted to kratom. He said nicotine was the hardest. But here's the crazy part. Both of them said the same thing. When they got off of it, they realized how much it was doing the negative.
Yeah.
How much of it was causing more brain fog and how much of it was causing like just symptoms they didn't even realize it was the nicotine. And when they stopped it, I'm doing a video with them on it, right? Because both of them started with an amount that would be healthy, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they ended up, they just needed it all day because they only felt normal for the moments, that small window of when they were on it, and they realized that it was ruining their day. But I want them to show like, oh my gosh, how healthy they are now.
Yeah, yeah. It's a hot topic right now, especially in the wellness community.
It is, because they're focused on the benefit of it. Uh-huh. And again, I'm the first to say there's a hormetic thing here that a little bit can be good. But the problem is it's so addictive for most people that it's you go over the hormetic window, right? Where it's easy for a lot of people to have one glass of wine, you know, hit and miss, right? And maybe, you know, once or twice a week, I have one glass of wine, right? It's like, because my hormetic window for alcohol is not very good, honestly, you know? So my dad, it's like my uncle who had wine every night. Every night he had his, you know, little drink and, you know, that was my dad. My dad smoked cigarettes for 55 years and, of course, ended up with lung cancer.
Wow.
And he had quit for 20, actually, but it still got him. But he still lived to 84 years old, you know? It's, like, amazing. But they didn't have the toxic load that we
Exactly.
had.
Exactly. I want to ask you about some unusual or lesser-known alternative healing therapies. Ozone therapy is one that I've been learning a lot about recently. What's your take on ozone?
Acts hormetically. Ozone is an oxidant, right? Oh my gosh, how could that be good? Because it stimulates the body in so many positive ways that it upregulates immunity and there's benefits to it, but you can be overdone.
Yeah.
It can be overdone.
What do you think about hyperbaric oxygen therapy?
I think it's great. I utilize one myself. And but again, it's they've learned now that, again, more is not better. And pulsing it is better. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think, again, it works on the same principle is that you're pushing oxygen into where you need oxygen, and that's a good thing. But, you know, again, it can be too much.
This is one that I'm the most unsure of, but it has come to my attention in different ways lately. And you've done videos on this with Jonathan Otto.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Urine therapy.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear your take on urine therapy, on drinking it, on putting it on your skin, because Jonathan would say it's the fountain of youth. It's the best thing you can do for your skin.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I love Jonathan. But he's a renegade.
Yeah. He is.
Yeah. He is.
It takes a lot of courage to go off like that on something that is so appalling to most people. So I do applaud him for that.
Yeah.
But I'm also just like personally very grossed out by that idea.
Yeah. It is a gross idea, but listen to this story, my Jonathan Otto story, right? So for years, I don't even remember, gosh, many, many years ago, someone said, when someone has a UTI, use urine. And a morning, just a Dixie cup full of urine fixes a UTI. So I remember
drinking it,
if morning urine.
If you have a UTI, drinking your own.
Yeah, and I remember in practice, trying it. With this woman who had a very complicated UTI, it worked. So then I did it again, worked again. My wife, my daughter, I mean, it worked.
No.
So that's the answer, right? You know, what's in the urine is certain metabolites antibodies that are your body's trying to do, and it's giving more of it. It acts literally almost like a homeopathic. It works. So Jonathan approaches me about urine therapy. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I use it for UTIs. Oh no. For this, for that. I'm like, oh wow. Yeah. Like really? Oh yeah. The whole morning void. Right. So having some success with urine therapy, if you will, and understanding it to that principle, he challenged me to doing it. So my wife, who had already done it for a UTI successfully, she wasn't freaked out at all because she got a benefit from it. So when I'm reading her these things about how urine therapy can work for this and why, blah, 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 she's like, yeah, let's do it. So Jonathan tells me to do it for at least, I'm thinking I'll do it for a few days,
yeah,
a week, whatever, max. And he says, no, you got to really try, do it for a month. I'm like, oh my gosh. And my wife says,
it has to be in the morning, right?
Yeah, morning urine. I don't know that it has to be, but that's the best. Okay. I say, okay. So anyway, so for 1 month, I wish my wife were here because she would laugh. Because so the first morning, where I committed to doing this, and totally as an experiment, right? That I got up and I'm walking to the bathroom at 6 a.m. and my wife says, don't forget to drink your urine. I'm like, oh my God, like I do not want to start my day with that. It was like,
yeah.
I was so mad that I had to do this. And it was horrible. People say, what does it taste like?
At least everything else you do the rest of the day seems like no big deal because you've already done something that's really like gross and hard.
That's true. Yeah. Frank Sinatra used to say, I feel bad for people who don't drink because in the morning, that's the best they're going to feel all day. Okay. So maybe urine drinking is the same. Anyway, so I said, okay, so I did it, right? And it tasted like urine. What's it taste like? It tastes like
it smells.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing. If you hold your nose, you don't taste it at all. But here's the problem. You could hold this nose for 20 minutes. And the moment you let it go, you taste it.
Still taste it.
So I learned to hold my nose.
With, and like orange juice or something?
Yeah. And then you eat something and then it minimally still has this like lingering flavor.
Yeah.
But here's the truth. Okay. Two truths. Truth number one is I got used to it. And I didn't even have to hold my nose anymore.
Wow.
Okay, so that's truth number one. Truth number two is I didn't notice anything. I didn't notice anything. So
did you have anything that you felt like you needed to optimize?
I'm N1, meaning like I didn't really.
You're feeling
pretty good. I wanted to feel better. I wanted to, I wanted something to happen, but it didn't. So that doesn't minimize the effect because people will be like, I noticed this, I noticed that.
Did your wife notice anything?
No, because again, she doesn't really, my wife notices nothing anyway, okay? So let's be clear.
I love people like that.
Yeah, exactly. She's what I call a turkey. They just like, she could take a handful of anything and like, notice nothing. So, but we did it. And, I can't say I'm any more convinced.
Did you put it on your skin?
No, but I've had people do that with skin problems and it helps.
I mean, Jonathan looks great. His skin.
Yeah. I mean, and Jonathan's drinking aged urine. Okay. Jonathan, there is no chance you're getting me to drink aged urine.
What is he? He just lets it sit and like ferment?
Yeah. They say the stem cells actually increase in the urine.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Do you put it in the fridge? Or like on the counter?
I don't know. I'm not doing it. Yeah. I'm not drinking aged urine. I mean, that's another level of gross.
I was thinking of like occasions when like the other day, my son, my youngest, he's 3. He had like he had missed the toilet. And so I cleaned it up with a towel and I like threw the towel in the garage like I was going to do the wash later. But I forgot until the next day and I walked out and it was horrible. Like the whole garage smelled like urine.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking like aged urine. That's the worst possible.
Yeah. You have to have Jonathan on and ask him like that question.
Yeah.
Like what's aged urine taste like compared to not aged? Ugh. And like, what does that smell like? I don't even want to know. I mean, urine is sterile, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue aged urine, is it still sterile? I mean, I don't know. I don't know, but I don't want to know. So, I mean, I'm an experimenter and, but that is a step too much. And I love Jonathan, but, he is something else,
Kudos to you guys for trying it.
Yeah. Rubbing it on the skin for anti-aging. There's something in it called urolithin A.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's spending a lot of money on urolithin A.
Yeah. It's, it helps. Pure.
Yeah.
What do you think of that supplement?
I don't notice anything when I take it. Mm-hmm. I committed to taking it for a period of time. But the science is real mm-hmm. around it. So, but I guess it's cheaper to drink your urine to get your urolith than hay. So, but anyways, that's one of the reasons why it could benefit your skin. And I've had people that have eczemas and things use it, and it benefits
them. And the urea.
Yeah,
right?
And urea.
It's good for the skin.
It's good for the skin. So,
interesting. Okay, one thing I forgot to ask you about earlier that I definitely want to touch on, because we have a lot of pregnant and nursing moms in our audience. What are some safe ways that pregnant or nursing moms can start to do some sort of detox? And I know it has to be more gentle, but is there anything that can be done?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they'll come after me so fast if I say any detox for a pregnant woman, right? I mean, you know, that's the truth, right? I mean, my gosh, if you mention supplements oftentimes, that's why every supplement bottle says not recommended for pregnant women, because that's
not the liability.
Exactly. Yeah. It's liability. So I'm going to hedge this one. Liability. You know, there are times that I have had women that we were detoxing, right? And they got pregnant. I told them to stop appropriately. And yet they were in things saying, oh my God, like my migraine headaches or my migraine headaches. And I'm like, look, I can't tell you to detox, but you know, they're like, but I'm going to, and they did. And it was like, oh my, it was like, you know, so could it actually lessen what ended up in the child because what needed cleared from the mother? You know, the answer to that is there's a time probably that it's, you know, more appropriate, but those are exceptional situations. I think, I don't think it's a time to challenge toxins out of your tissues mm-hmm. when you're pregnant.
Just let them steep in there for a little bit.
I mean, your body, I would sooner rely on innate intelligence to protect the baby and you. And those were very exceptional times of very, very toxic people that I couldn't even believe they got pregnant type of situations. But I do believe that it, you know, it's a time to pull back mm-hmm. and rely on innate intelligence.
Yeah.
So I think it's more important for them to avoid what's coming in to the bucket.
Yeah.
And that's when you really need to get as strict as you can to minimize what you're, you know, putting in your body.
Yeah. And probably just getting back to the basics, like spending time outside.
Grounding, really, sun, yeah. I mean, all of that.
Walking, that's, getting that, up fast.
That's helping innate intelligence, you know, and I think that is what you focus on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a few rapid fire questions to close us out. Mm-hmm. What is one health practice that you will never give up?
Detox. I still practice what I got me well and what I preach. I still do it. I don't do it as often because I don't need to. When I was sick, I did cycles of detox for 2 years consistently, less consistently for another 2 years. And now, you know, I probably do one of my cycles, you know, every other month, maybe, you know, but I do it because I will never give it up. Why? Because I know what's really making people sick is the load of toxicity. Even as good as we do, you and I, we are still getting exposures.
Yeah.
And that's why detox today is more important than anything.
So you're still doing your Pompa program about every other.
I still do brain phases, what I call it. There's a prep phase, body phase, brain phase. I still do brain phases.
And if people want to learn more about
my wife,
that.
Too, my wife and I always do it together. I keep pointing to her, but she left with the dogs.
She was there.
She's
now.
Vaporized. But yeah, so we still do it. We do it together.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And how can people learn more about the Pompa program?
If they just go to pompaprogram.com, I think there's a teaching there. There's no charge for it, but it's like the same teaching that I do for the doctors. They can watch it.
Very cool. What is the most overrated wellness trend that you're seeing online right now?
The most overrated wellness trend. There's a few right now. I mean, again, I think that overrated, like the cold baths, right? It's like, I do them. I don't do them as frequently as most, but I think it's overrated because of how people are violating hormesis. So I think more people are being unhelped than helped. Even though I think it can be helpful.
Yeah.
It's overrated. Obviously, I think bioidentical hormones is way overrated, as I pointed out.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately in our space.
That's like, getting a lot of.
And again, time and a place, but it's not health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your favorite food indulgence?
For sure, pizza or vanilla ice cream. Gelato.
Nice.
Yeah. For sure. 100%. So I get artisan, I get a pizza made with a flour from Italy.
Okay.
Yeah. You know?
Okay, so it's not like Domino's.
Yeah, I don't, I have to do quality because it's better anyway. It's not like I'm compromising, it's better. You know, real mozzarella, you know, margarita pizza with real tomato sauce, you know, like the good stuff, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, man, that's...
As you're describing this, are you like sad that you just canceled your trip to Italy next month?
Yes, I am. I am. Yeah.
I've had a lot of pizza and gelato over there.
Yeah, and my dessert of choice is definitely, absolutely gelato. I mean, no doubt about it.
Ice cream. That's like the one thing that I am less strict on with my kids. Like, we're pretty careful about their diets and what they eat, but that's one thing that I'm like...
Yeah.
I'm not letting them have, like, anything with food dyes or just, like, crap in it.
Yeah.
But if, like, we're out and find, like, a great, like, you know, decent... ice cream place, like, okay.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, I said about going to influence, you know, people in our space that are very popular, and going to dinner, I made the comment about the water. They're drinking the tap water, but I watch them order the food without going, wait, I'm allergic to seed oils. That's what we say. We're allergic to seed oils because you get their attention. And then they're like, oh, that sauce, that's a... So I make no exception on seed oils. Zero. You know why? See, I'll make an exception on sugar, the gelato, the ice cream. Why? Because I'm healthy enough. I'll burn that up, right? And it does... It's hours, you know.
Not years.
Not years.
Yeah.
So those seed oils accumulate in your cells, driving... So I make no exception there. Right. So would I eat an ice cream with seed oil? No way. But I'll eat an ice cream with sugar.
Yeah.
I can always have sugar.
I'm totally with you on that. And we most of the time will ask the questions about the oils at the restaurants as well. And I know that's another thing. A lot of people will say it's too stressful to avoid seed oils. It's like once you get used to doing it, it's really not a big deal.
Yeah.
And a lot of times now they come up and right away they say, do you have any dietary restrictions?
Right.
And so it's like the more people that are saying that, the more change is going to happen
absolutely.
From the restaurant.
You know what else is overrated? This is a dietary one that's overrated, is gluten. And here's what I mean. There's certain people, if they touch gluten, they're in big trouble. They should avoid gluten. There's some people that are sensitive to gluten, not super allergic. They should avoid gluten. And it's very inflammatory for them, right? But when I was sick, I was that person. I couldn't eat it. And matter of fact, I couldn't eat most grains. I was reacting to certain proteins because my gut was, you know, wide open as far as a leaky gut goes. But today I can eat gluten. Now, I choose to eat healthy, organic gluten. Like I'm not, because regular wheat is sprayed with glyphosate, which is worse than the gluten.
Yeah.
But if you don't have leaky gut, your body is fine with gluten. But I think people, and here's why I say it's overrated. I think people reach for gluten. It's this new health trend. No gluten. It's cool. And it's like, you know, that's gluten is even the biggest problem for you. It's the glyphosate that's on that wheat that's the bigger problem for you.
Which is also on the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's all over those, the blueberries, the apples.
All of it. And that's what creates the leaky gut and makes you respond to the gluten in the first place. So would I agree that gluten's bad for most people because most people have leaky gut? I would agree. But people feel like they're doing good by, this is non-gluten. And I look at it, it's like, it's gluten-free, but you see what's in it?
Yeah. I know. I think avoiding gluten is like a good first step, and it's where a lot of people start. But now there's just so much gluten-free junk food.
That's the point. So it's overrated as this big health step, right? It's like, and again, acknowledging that gluten can be very bad, especially for certain people. But if you have an ancient organic grain that has gluten, way better than a lot of things that people are eating.
Which most people probably aren't sourcing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, do I acknowledge also that the reason why people don't react to gluten with Italian wheat, if you will, is because it's a different grain, for sure. It's a more ancient grain, different gluten strain. So that gluten is definitely better than our gluten. And they don't use glyphosate, which opens up the gut when it hits your gut and allows the gluten to go through. So even if you don't have leaky gut chronically, when you eat glyphosate wheat, it opens it up, tight junctions, and in goes gluten, and gluten drives the inflammation. You know, so, but if you're eating it without glyphosate, and especially if it's an ancient grain, then the gluten doesn't have to be reactive.
What does a day of eating look like for you?
You know, most days I don't eat breakfast, but I purposely eat breakfast at least 2 days a week. Just diet variation. Remind my body it's not starving. Mm-hmm. I typically eat two meals, maybe 1-2 days a week. I eat one meal. See, I vary it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are eating one or two meals a day every day. The body will eventually think it's starving. You need more feast days. So I feast at least 2 or 3 days a week, and meaning I'll eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And my first meal is typically a very, like, my first meal, let's say it's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or, you know, 1 o'clock or noon. It's typically something very simple. I mean, honestly, and sometimes it's a blender meal, right? Where it's like, because I'm on the go, right? Yeah. You know, and then dinner, if I'm in ketosis, it's a ketotic meal. It's super low carb. Sometimes I'm eating higher healthy carbs. You know, then it's going to be, it'll, you know, be more towards healthier carbs and a protein.
Yeah.
Pretty basic.
So you
honestly
keep it pretty varied.
I do. I keep it pretty varied, but simple foods.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I am. My wife and I aren't big chefs, you know, so I tend to prepare things very simply.
Yeah. I'm the same. I'm laughing because I'm the same.
Yeah.
An average meal for me is like ground beef, blueberries, and avocado, and I don't know, maybe a glass of raw milk or something.
Yeah. I love raw milk. I think raw dairy, grass-fed dairy, is one of the healthiest foods on the planet. Ironic, because conventional dairy is probably one of the most toxic.
Yeah.
So
you
therefore,
can't even compare the two. They're not in the same category.
It's kind of like gluten in that it's misunderstood, right? Uh-huh. It's like this conventional dairy has a protein far more toxic than gluten, but it's a bigger protein. So not as many people are sensitive to it, but beta casein one, man, it's like it'll send people reeling. But if you real dairy, real raw dairy from grass-fed cows, you know, typically beta casein A2, different protein, amazing, healthy food, fat-soluble vitamins, loaded with vitamin D, vitamin K, the vitamins that people are really lacking. Raw milk has it, right? So good bacteria. This is poison, mucus-causing. But yeah, so love raw milk. And by the way, I grass-fed. That's another thing. We grass-fed meats all the time, 100% grass-fed, grass-finished. I don't ever eat conventional chicken, ever.
Me neither.
When you know what we know, you're not making that, you know.
Conventional chicken grosses me out more than any other conventionally raised animal.
Yeah, I'm with you. So at restaurants, you know, I like lamb, I like clean fish, and I like, and now restaurants, the restaurant I ate last night had a grass-fed, grass-finished steak. That's what I ordered.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more common for sure.
Uh-huh.
What is one action item that you wish everyone listening would take this week?
We said the, you know, change what you're washing your clothes in.
Please.
Yes.
Take
I mean,
the dryer sheets.
Yeah.
Right now.
Right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
You don't need them.
If you heard this right now. Yeah. I mean, that's like, watch what happens to your hormones. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you and learn more from you?
I mean, my Instagram is drpompa, right? My website's drpompa.com.
Easy.
So that's easy. And then Pompa program, you know, if you're looking to get your health back. So.
Amazing. Thank you for all the information that you're putting out into the world and sharing with people. I know it's helping so many people. So thank you.
I love it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.